Hello and welcome, everyone. My name is Whitney Renee, and thank you for tuning in to the Distinctive Bullshit Podcast.
And this is Omari J, and today's topic are going to be on different levels of grief. How does that affect people and families, financials, because that's important. What happens to kids if there's kids involved?
Are you talking about, we're talking about all different levels of grief, like as a whole.
As a whole, you know.
So one of the things I think about, I guess when we'll start with grief, and let's say, how do you deal with grief when you're used to or you're accustomed to a certain financial lifestyle? Because I think a lot of people don't really, I guess, consider that grief, but then you kind of do. Like you could go from, at any moment, the way that I look at it, you're like one paycheck away from being like homeless.
Underwater.
Yeah, I wouldn't say homeless, but yeah, maybe underwater.
Yeah.
Or maybe you could be in a position to where you never had anything and then you have things, and so you handle your money differently, and vice versa. One where you've always had things and then you've kind of had to scale back on things, and you internalize that and you deal with that on a whole different level of.
That could be a real shock if all of a sudden, you know, you've got this $400,000 house, we'll say, which is cheap in today's standards.
You think so?
Middle. I wouldn't say cheap. Let me walk that back. It's
because cheap to me is cheap, like, is like, yeah,
that's 125, 200. That's,
yeah,
cheap.
That's cheap.
Though probably like high middle. High middle is like 400 plus before you get. But anyway, but if you're going and you're living in a house like that, and then all of a sudden your main breadwinner dies, what does that look like for you? Do you use your insurance money if you have insurance? Because a lot of people don't have life insurance. Do you use that insurance money to live off, to stay in that house because you're used to that lifestyle? Do you sell the house, move somewhere cheaper? But what does that do for you and your family?
Well, I'm not looking at it at like that type of form of grief. I'm talking like, if you, I guess, are in a financial state, and for whatever reason, you have to take a lower paying job, or you have to make sacrifices or cut down your hours a little bit, then at that moment, how do you deal with that on an internal level? So, like, example, there are times that people, I guess, have had to do that, and they're used to a certain lifestyle, and because they've had to dial back, it's very hard for them. They don't necessarily want to let people into their circle and say, I can no longer do this because I've had to do X, Y, and Z. I've had to cut my hours down.
Okay.
Or if one person, you know, two people are, I guess, in a position to, like, they're together, but, you know, one person is sick or something, and then they just can't do the things. Like, how do you deal with that? I think
it, as an adult, I look at it this way. I'm very, like, cutthroat. You can't afford your. The way that I look at things is in the eyes of how we manage our money and plan for our future, so that when things, because we've talked about that before, where if something changes, we'll say I become a vegetable for whatever reason. Where do we go from there? Because in that scenario, medical comes in, you got to pay more medical bills.
No, I'm not paying nothing. You become a vegetable, I'm not paying nothing. At that point,
you gonna let me die?
That's something we've already talked about, but.
But that's what I'm saying. But that, if something major happens to one of the breadwinners in the family, that changes the entire dynamic.
It can and it can't. And the only reason why I'm saying that it can and it can't depends on how you've set up your life. There's no, I guess, textbook right way to set up in that scenario. Because in my opinion, you can never be prepared for that. What I'm talking about, grieving financially, I'm not talking about in the event that something happens. how do you deal with stressors in life when you don't have the financial means? Because that's a form of grief. How do you...
I never looked at it like that.
Yes, how do you better yourself? Like, for me, I think about, even though you're my husband, that's great, but it's still up to me. I pretend as if you were never there. Like my favorite saying, I used to not know you. So I need to make sure that I'm financially stable on my own in the event that something happens to you that I can carry outside of a life insurance policy, outside of everything else, yeah, that I would be able to still make things happen and make shit work in the event that you were no longer there. So that creates a financial grief for me because I want to make sure that in the now, while I'm here, I have a great, like, I guess, nest egg. And that's just preparing yourself. But a lot of people don't think that way. So that's what I mean by financial grief. Not okay, something terribly happens. Just, I think it is important to make sure that whether you're in a relationship, whether you're married to someone, whether you, I don't know, have a lot of savings, that you make sure that you're putting yourself in a financial state to where, yeah, it might be a little hard, but you can still sustain it, you know, and thinking about ways to get yourself out of. Good example, I always make a joke. There's people that are house broke. There are people that are, I guess I would call material broke. And what I mean by that is they have an abundance of material things, but nothing to leave back behind if something happens. Shit hits the fan. House broke is you have a house and you can barely get by on making your payment, but you keep it just for the sake of saying of having a house. To me, that's a financial way of thinking. That's a way of financial grief to some point, because why would you want to keep something and hold on to something so much all for the sake of saying that you have it? Like, example, me and you went through the whole building process. Yeah. The moment we were like, if interest rates go this too high, we're pulling it out. Yeah. Because I'm not going to live in something just to say that I have it. I'm a A, B, C, D, E, F, G planner. And I know that's probably not the best way to live.
I think it's the perfect way to live, because the exact thing that we said was going to happen, that we didn't want it, and it happened, and we ended up having to back out from the building the house. But I think I see what you're saying, but when I hear the word grief, I'm thinking like emotional state that of
takes
grief.
That takes the emotion. You can have an emotional grief out of, example, there's people that, like how me, you, and mommy were talking the other day, and you guys spend money totally different.
Than how you do. Yes.
Yes, because you guys have grown up differently. My parents made sure that even if they went broke, we had the best to their best ability. So I recognized that and saw that and made sure that I never wanted to be like them. I don't want to go broke to provide for my kids.
I agree with that 100%. And I think that, because I remember some years ago, you had mentioned something about us not being able to thrive as we used to. Because when we first got together, we had all these goals. All right, well, we definitely need to make more money. We need to do this. We need to do that. And we need to do this. And because of that mindset, it pushed us to continue. All right, well, we have this extra money, let's put this over here, or we're gonna pay this and we're gonna do that. And we managed our money a lot. I wouldn't say better, but a lot more strategically.
We did because we were making less, but again, that's a form of, like, if we had to go back to living like that, it would be very hard, because I would be grieving and giving up some of the things that we're able to do now. That's what I mean by grief. Like, we've been able to do a lot more for the kids, meaning they can do a lot more because we make a lot more money. So I don't know. It's just one of those things where just something to put in the back of your head. How do you get out of that mindset? How do you, you know, clear that whole, I guess, thought process of, oh, well, I got it, so spend it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, it's not that serious. You should really try to. But anything else you want to say? I'm sorry.
No. You ain't got to be sorry for that. I agree with you. Understanding your definition of like the money grief, I can see where you're getting at. But I think a lot of people, and we've had conversations with plenty of our friends, they don't look that far ahead necessarily. Like, they plan for certain stuff, you know. Oh, yeah, not everyone doesn't have a savings. Mm-mm. People have savings, mm-hmm. you know. But what percentage of those people have a savings that's going to be able to sustain them for a few months at a time? Not, oh, I have, you know, $700 just like in case for an oh shit moment. No, oh shit, I lost my job.
Yeah, like, yeah. That's what I mean. But then see, that comes in with the financial grief, because if you don't have that, it's very hard for you to see light at the end of the tunnel. Like, hey, I can make this happen, because you don't have a what I would call a safety net.
Yeah.
So I think that's very important, just to be mindful of.
But they always say, they always, I shouldn't say they as in like economics or economists, mm-hmm. I should say, and like money people always say, you know, you should always save up at least 3 to 6 months worth of
what you would have going out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just in case you lose your job and you're down for that much or whatever the case may be. But I think it's hard in today's climate.
And no, I don't think it is. I think it's actually very easy, very simple. And I say that because, kind of like what I was talking about with the whole financial coaching, there are four different types of spenders. Mm-hmm. So there is the earn, this the earn, spend spender. And what that means is you work, you earn your money for mm-hmm. your every biweekly or weekly paycheck, and then you spend it. So you earn it and then you spend it immediately. It's out of the door. Yeah. You don't really have much to carry over. You don't have any of that. Then there's the earn, spend, loan, spend.
Mm-hmm.
That is the trickiest spender. And those are people that will earn their money. They will then spend it, and then they will take out a loan. So that's your check cashing people, your payday advance people, loan them the money to be able to spend it, thinking that when they earn again, they'll be able to pay it back. So they're in this continuous cycle. Then there is the people like me and you.
Oh, shit.
No. Like, this is real shit. Okay. So then there's people that will do earn, spend, save. That's the cycle me and you are in. That is not the best person, though. Earn, spend, save. So what that means is we earn our money, we spend it, and whatever we have left over, we save. Now, that means that we kind of have a good money concept of, you know, kind of like how we're going to do things and what we need to do, and we're like, hey, we need to save it. The best habit to get into to be able in this society to thrive and be able to save, you have to be the number four person. You have to be able to do what? Earn, save, spend. Mm-hmm. So you earn your money, you pay yourself first. Paying yourself first is make sure you're having that financial nest egg.
Yeah.
And then everything else goes to your bills, the things that you need to do. So we're trying, me and you are getting to the earn, save, spend. Right now we're in the earn, spend, save.
Yeah.
So I think it all depends on how you look at it and how you kind of like finagle that whole deal, because it's not really hard. It's just that I think we think we need all of this stuff just to live and go through life, but we really don't. People really set down some time and thought about, okay, this is what I have to do. I have to. When you get in a mindset of you earn your money and you put your savings in there first, it's a different type of feeling, because then everything else is an allotment for your bills, your extras, if you need to want to go out and spend something. So you already put that money aside. You've already saved it.
Mm-hmm.
So I get what you're saying, but see, learned something new.
No, you learned something new, but, you know, we wouldn't. But these are the types of things, like, although we had a good idea about our financials when we got together and how we were going to move our money and save and spend our money, a lot of people don't. And I think it's because they're in that mindset of, I have to enjoy life, but I'm going to go broke doing it.
You think so?
Absolutely. Think we've had 4-5 vehicles since we've been together.
Yeah, that's about standard.
How many of those vehicles are super flashy? We put rims on them and tint and do all that extra stuff, that unnecessary spending money.
I don't think that's unnecessary spending money, though. It depends on what type of person. You could have somebody that has a really nice car and they live in a studio or an apartment and they can afford it. That's not over. Yeah,
well, if you can afford it, that's one thing. But if you, there should be no reason that you're worried about what your car should look like or how you should be dressed when you don't have the funds to barely be able to afford rent without assistance. And yeah, I'm not targeting certain people or demographics or anything, but why is it so important to look the part if you're not the part?
That's the problem.
That's a society
there's
thing.
There's no such thing to look the part.
Absolutely not. I don't care for that. I go out of here in a Snuggie and some shorts.
Dear Lord. Well, I mean, I guess a good word of advice for that would be just take an overview snapshot and kind of look at your financial state. And if it's something that you're grieving over, meaning if it's something like you're like, hey, I always have to spin to do this, look at it and really ask yourself, do I need it? Wants versus needs. Because you can want everything in the world, but do you actually need it?
That's the key thing. Is it a necessity to have?
So that way you're not grieving over material things in the event of a traumatic experience or over something happening, because it's kind of like it was a bonus anyway. I mean, right. I know that's what I'm working on personally outside of us, is like, are these things that I really need or are these things that I really want? So we're going to take a quick break and we'll be back and we'll be talking about friendship grief. We won't spend that much time on that, but friendship grief. We'll be back.
Welcome. Welcome back, everybody. This is Omari J, and we're going to talk about family and friend grief and what that looks like. How does that affect somebody, and what does that do to that relationship?
So I'll start, and I'll start with friend grief. And that's something I feel like I've dealt with more probably than the average person. And it's because I feel like I'm very patient with my friends. So what I mean by that is I am more willing to show my friends grace and understand like where they're coming from in certain aspects in life to mm-hmm. where, you know, it may put a little bit of a damper on a relationship. However, I feel like me being that way has brought an awareness of how I handle and deal with friendships as a whole. So I realize that, kind of like how me and you are talking, I'm everyone's go-to person, but I have no one to go to because I'm so patient with my friends. It's very rare that many people will just take the time and just say, hey, bitch, how are you doing? But in that off chance that they do, I am more willing, like it makes me happy because it's like, yeah. Oh, wow, you noticed something. But I've also, I guess as far as dealing with the friendship grief, I'm realizing as I'm getting older and as I'm navigating this thing through life and in new places or new phases, like with work and friends and, you know, running our family and with the kids, that I am outgrowing a lot of things that no longer aligns with where I want to be at.
Yeah.
So like there are, you know, people that were in my life that maybe I would be overly patient with. And now I can't tell you the last time I talked to them, and I'm okay with that. It doesn't mean that I have a beef with them. It doesn't mean that I have like ill intentions or
right.
ill feelings. It's just kind of like one of those things where we're not in a space to be on that level anymore. And like, that's okay. Mm-hmm. But then you go back and you might see like a memory pop up or something.
Yeah.
Or you might, you know, really think about them and you may reach out, you know, every once in a while, but it's kind of like one of those things where, how do you recognize that, move on? Because I feel like sometimes I was guilty of saying, hey, well, they were my friend for such a long time. I got to hold on to it. But is that healthy?
No.
You know what I mean? Like, is it one of those things where you're just being friends with people just based off of the longevity part of it? You know what I mean? And that's one of the things that I'm steering away from. I don't have a lot of regrets, though, if that makes sense. Like, I feel like everybody was placed in my life for a reason. And I'm realizing, too, that everybody is not meant to be your friend, but maybe they need you as a friend so that they can be a better person.
At that particular point in their life.
Right.
Okay.
And in the event that it no longer blossoms, that's okay. Because you guys pulled from each other what you needed in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's still a process. And even when you feel like you're not as close to some of your friends that you've always been close with, that's a hard thing to deal with when you sit back and you think, man, I never thought we would not be friends anymore. Or man, like, yeah, you know what I mean?
I've gone through that. And I think I still go through that. Like, just really? Like you. Yeah, just like you. Because it's like one of those things, like, I talk to my friends now and just some of the stuff that they go through, I'm just like, why put yourself in that situation? That's unnecessary. You know what you need to do to get out, but yeah, you're choosing not to. Like, I don't have time for that. You know what I mean? Like, you can't always be the friend that everybody goes to when they need advice. At some point, the individual that's experiencing or going through that phase in their life, mm-hmm, where they relied on you for, okay, well, let me talk to my friend that has things going for her. At some point, you got to be like, all right, look, we've had this discussion too many times. Here are your options to get out of this situation. Either you're going to take them or you're not.
But does that necessarily kill a friendship?
Like, no, no, absolutely not. As a friend, you should be able to be open with that person or with those people about how you're feeling in the situation that they're in. If they keep coming to you, you're going to have an input for them. You can't just be like, well, I've told you this before, I'm going to tell you it again.
That's true.
It's like, but you can't do it.
I mean, you can, but I think you just have to be mindful of the amount of time and energy you put into it. So, like, you know, it may be a thing where they always call you about job related. And I'm getting better at being mindful of that too. Mm-hmm. Like, the type of things that I vent about or stress about, I realize and recognize, you know what they say, a person that has a great amount of self-awareness typically are great workers, great friends, and great relatives, because they're so self-aware that they're able to admit the things that they do. And mm-hmm, because they can do that, it's easier for them to recognize and kind of know not to do it to other people. Because they're aware that, like, I know I complain a lot about my workspace. I know I could complain a lot about ripping and running or something like that. So I'm very mindful what I share, because I know that that could be a Debbie Downer all the time. Like, if I'm always venting to my friends about my job. So I may pop up and just quit a job. I'm just, not that I'm doing that, but yeah, I may just pop up and quit a job. Like, damn, bitch, I didn't even know you had a job, because I'm sure it is draining to hear me always vent about something, not realizing that they may be in a position where they have a shitty job themselves, and you may have a better perk
right
at your job.
But you're just dumping everything out on that top perk of what that other person is already going through
right
at their job. And nobody wants to deal with that all the time. That's a one-way relationship. If you never take the time out to really focus on the person you want to get information, or I shouldn't say information, but the person you're trying to get guidance from.
Yeah.
If you're not reciprocating a friendship where you're the listener,
mm-hmm,
that becomes
draining.
It's an emotional black hole.
It's
an emotional black hole, because all the emotion that you think that you should be projecting out and be caring for the person that's coming to you, you just don't care anymore. You're just like, whatever, I'm going to say this again, and you're still going to do the same thing. I'm going to mention going over here for a better opportunity, and you're going to stay in the same spot.
No, I don't do that anymore. I listen with the intent to not respond at all and make you figure it out yourself. See, I'm that type of person now at this point. If you're coming to me with the same problems, I'm not going to give you advice anymore, especially if we've already tapped on that subject. I'm going to make you repeat yourself so that way you can hear how ridiculous you're being yourself. Because I am that friend that comes off as, she always has something to say. And it's not that I necessarily have something to say. It's just that, again, we've been there, done that. I'm going to make you repeat yourself. I'm going to make you, you're going to have to, at some point, you're going to have to put your big girl panties on and figure it out.
Yeah.
So.
But then that leads into work, though. Like your work style grief. So like we'll say I'm at my job and my job is just absolutely horrible for whatever reason. I keep coming to you every single day. I come to you, I'm like, babe, I don't know what's going on. I feel like this is happening and da 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 da. When you first start and in your first listening, you're going to be more receptive to the things that I'm saying. You're gonna be more empathetic in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
As time goes on, if you've given me the advice that I've needed to hear in order to progress and you know get out of that situation, and I don't leave or I don't take that, what is the point in staying at that job? What is the point in continually?
Well, and that's the thing. That's not. I don't agree with that because I feel like you can vent, and as a friend or as a spouse, you should be receptive of that because people can't just quit their jobs. Like you could do everything in the world and put your application out there, your resume out there. And if it's not biting, it's not biting. I'm not talking about anything work related. Oh, okay. I don't know where the hell that came from.
Because it's just like one of those things where we're just talking about friends and work. No,
I'm totally talking about friends and just some of the things like you just realizing like, okay, we're friends, but we're just not on that level anymore, which then leads me to the topic of family. How do you deal with the grief of family? And I'm not talking about grief of like if they pass away or something happens to them, it's a freak accident, nothing like that. I'm talking about how do you deal with recognizing that you have family and you're not necessarily a tight, you don't necessarily have a tight connection with that family. I don't even want to say tight connection. You don't fit in, and not fitting in like some of the things that y'all like, but kind of like there's a separation on
who you want to talk to and who you're going to be around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like for me, I feel like the best way to get around that is to build an individual relationship with the people that want to be as equally involved with you. And the reason why I say that is you can have family and you can love them, but I was always taught sometimes you have to deal with people with a long-handed spoon. Like, you know, in the back of your mind, it's still your brother, it's still your sister, it's still your auntie, it's still your cousin, they're still your grandparents, and they're still your mom and your dad. But sometimes you have to protect your own space and energy, and you have to understand and recognize things for what they are. Like for me, mm-hmm. I have family members that they'll talk to everybody else, but they don't talk to me. Mm. And that's okay. For the longest time, it used to bother me to my core.
It did for me too.
It did?
Yeah.
Yeah. It used to bother me so bad, but then I recognized this. We're family, but some of the things you do anyway, I wouldn't want that shit around my kids anyway.
Right.
Or some of the things, your mindset, it doesn't really align with mine. I still love you though, but you still don't want to hear that shit.
Yeah, right. You still family. That. Like if I see you in passing, hey, what's going on? How you doing? I love you. You know, hope everybody's doing well. But after a while, you know, you don't have that relationship. You're just like, okay.
Yeah.
It is what it is.
And literally, studies have shown that it really is what it is at sometimes. Like
it has to be.
It has to be. That's the only way. So like, How do you personally deal with that? Like how has that, because I know your thought process is different. Like you're not from Ohio. So when you moved yourself, like how did you deal with maybe losing those connections with people?
It was hard.
You think so?
It was hard. Like initially it wasn't as bad as I thought it was gonna be because I wanted to get away. But then after being here, I've been here for what, 15 years now almost? And I can't just drive to my grandma's house no more. It's a 6-hour drive just to get there, to in the stay there for how long, you know? So seeing the people that I want to see on a regular basis is extremely difficult. But with the advent of technology, video chatting, it's not so bad.
So
I think as time has gone on, it's gotten a lot easier. But still, you want to be around those people.
Okay, so boom. How do you deal with, or how have you dealt with maybe having a relationship or having a good like connection with family and then no longer having that connection? Now, let's take out the moving part. I'm talking about
just communication.
Yeah, just communication. Like, how have you dealt with that? Because like I struggle with that, like within my own family, but it's kind of like one of those things where it's like it's not, I don't want to say necessarily, it is a form of grief, or it is a form of just recognizing like, okay, that relationship is kind of dead, especially when you realize like the effort isn't being reciprocated.
Right. Yeah. I take a page out of your book. At some point I just stopped caring. Honestly, it's one of those things like, yeah, if I see you in passing, great. Hey, it's good to see you. You know, we're still family, but I'm not going to make an effort outside of if we're in Illinois, you know, and we have a big old family gathering, you know, outside of that. Okay. We'll see you later. Yeah. Next time, you know, whenever. But it's taken a while to get there.
Really?
Yeah.
I think that it's kind of like one of those things where you miss it. I think, though, too, kind of like how we were talking yesterday, people have to get in the back to normal communication. Outside of just sending a text here and there or liking a Facebook status or an Instagram picture, like actually
a video call or a phone call,
and just shooting the shit with them like, hey, what's up? I didn't want anything. I just haven't seen your face. Right. I feel like because once you get to that point, you know, it's kind of like, okay, like we're family. But I do think that it is good to, and I think a lot of that too, like when you're dealing with families or family members, and like right now, like we're the adults and we have kids, like it's our responsibility to keep the kids intertwined with their cousins.
Right.
It's our responsibility to keep the kids intertwined and engaged with like their aunts and uncles. But at some point you have to realize it's not always up to you. If you're the one that's always reaching out,
you have to
hold people accountable. Cause if you can't do that with your own family, you might as well treat them as friends. I live by, it's not family doesn't make you family. It's the family that you build, because from experience,
the family you build is always more important than the family you came from.
There is some truth to that.
Yeah.
There is some truth to that. I do agree. So, I mean, so last, before we wrap it up for the family and friends, I guess what would be your advice for anyone that is struggling with that?
If you're struggling with talking to family, have a conversation with that family member, and kind of get an understanding of where the two of you sit.
Oh, that's a good one.
And go from there.
It sounds good,
but I need to practice it.
I was about to say that sounds good because you should practice it.
I should probably practice that, yeah. But
you want to know my advice?
Let's hear
Put
it.
Put two tears in a bucket, say fuck it. I mean, now we've been family. No, I'm joking. I mean, but there is some, that is my advice to that. I would say acknowledge it, work on it, and make it happen.
If it doesn't happen, then you know where it stands and just leave it there.
So what did you say again?
I said, what did I just say? Have a conversation with that family member. Establish that relationship so you know you two are on the same page. And if nothing flourishes from that, just leave it where it's at. And then, like you said, if you see them in passing, hey, how's it going? And hope you're doing well.
I think it's like that with friends, too. I think you should do that with friends, too.
Yeah.
But, yep. Have a conversation with them. See where you guys stand at, and if it blooms or blossoms from there, great. If not, it's okay. Like, you've already had this conversation. We shouldn't have to keep going back and forth over the same things over and over.
Yeah.
So we're going to go on a quick break, and when we get back, we got a couple questions that we're going to ask and just kind of want some feedback on. We'll just do a little open discussion, but stick around, and we'll be back. All right, thank you, and welcome back. If you're still listening, thank you, because I know, you know, sometimes people don't like really listening to people. You know what I'm saying? So,
what's up?
Just some questions, because I know we talked about a lot of things related to grief. So, one of the things I want to talk about, or just your input, they don't have to be long answers, because we all know how much you like to give long, drawn-out answers to one simple-ass question.
I like to be thorough.
So, if in the event that you passed away today, how would you want your ceremony to be and why?
I don't want a ceremony. I would just want just the people in like that in our immediate circle just to get together, have a party, and enjoy the life that I lived. Not be sad about the life that I lost. And really move forward from there. Because I know when I was young, I lost a parent, and it was devastating. But there was no moments of, oh, hey, you know, we enjoyed this, you know, when we went over here and we did this, and here are all these pictures. And there was none of that. I know how it affected me as a kid, and if our kids had to go through that, or my kids had to go through that, like the big kids, I would want them to see the happier side of things.
Yeah, I agree.
Not the depressing, sad stuff.
I agree.
Yeah. What about you?
I would say it would be different for me because I feel like my mom would make sure I had a ceremony. Let it be up to her. I really do to some extent. Probably my dad, too.
Probably be grandiose and what? All grandiose, like all grand and over the top.
No, probably not. They know I'm pretty simple, but then they say I'm extra, so I don't know. I would say I just want something where it's like a memorial service. I don't necessarily want like a funeral per se, but more like a service of just like celebration, kind of like celebration. And that's actually one thing I'm gonna work on. I'm gonna work on a list of people that I want. And I specifically want somebody like you or mommy, or even like big dog Keisha. Keisha be like, nope. Whitney said, you're not on the list. You're not coming in.
She's a bouncer.
I want a bouncer at mine. Cause y'all know, I'm a little bit of life at a party. So yeah, no, I know damn well Whitney would not have want you to have come.
Like, why are you here?
Like I genuinely don't want people. Oh, we go way back. And
no. Yeah, that's the crap I want to avoid. People that you ain't seen in years, and all of a sudden you want to show up out of nowhere talking about some, oh, we were friends.
Yeah, no, I don't want that. And I just want all my favorite songs playing. And the food, I want chicken.
You're not going to be able to eat it.
I know the people will. I want people to eat chicken and all the things that I really enjoyed and stuff like that enjoy it, because they knew that this was Whitney Jam. Hell, I might even ask them to have karaoke at my funeral. So remember that, babe. Karaoke. I want people
karaoke
to sing
at the funeral.
Yeah, I want people to sing songs that remind
them of you.
Yes. Yes. That would be the way to go out for sure.
And then have like on like a projector of like all the happy moments from all these parties and stuff that we did.
That's how I would want it. I don't think I would want somebody looking at me in a
casket and talking about, Ma, you look so cute in your casket. They did your makeup really well.
No, I ain't doing all that. And I want my hair. I want my hair just like I'll be waking up in the morning. I don't even want it combed. Because at that point, I'm dead. Like, I'm about to get burnt up and get cremated or poked on because I want to get my body to science. But at that point, why? I want them to be like, you know what, Whitney? Oh, matter of fact, I want them to wrap my hair up in a head wrap. Because I love my head wraps.
Or a hat. Earrings.
Like, why flat iron and do it and make it all pretty? For what? I'm about to be in the ground or burnt up.
You'll be burnt up.
Yeah. So therefore, like, why? So okay. So we on the same page on that. Yeah. So you know how to do it up big dog. Because I'm gonna be pissed if it don't work out that way.
It's gonna work
out. I'm
gonna
come
back
and haunt you.
Don't do that.
All right.
I would love it, but don't do that. You'd be like, ooh. I'm like, hey, baby.
First off, bye. So another question I have is, what would be the best way to quit your job if you really hated it?
I saw I was on Reddit. I kid you not. This was last week. I think it was probably Wednesday. I was on Reddit, and in this subreddit that I was under is called Anti-Work.
Yeah.
And one of the managers had from some company had posted a picture and said, "This is how one of my employees quit today." And it was a picture of SpongeBob that said, "All right, I'm gonna head out." And it was signed at the bottom, effective immediately.
That is something horrible. Like that.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
That's how you would quit your job.
The job I'm at now, no, I wouldn't do that.
No, I'm saying, I said, a job that you hated.
What
would be the boss way to go out?
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. I'd probably make a cake or something like that, like one of those smash cakes. And like when you smash it or something would pop out of the cake and be like, "I quit." And like streamers.
That's lame. That's like celebrating. They would probably be like, "Good.
Celebrate your exit."
No, they would probably be like, "We ain't like his ass anyway." I think for me, you know what I would do?
What?
This is so wrong. But I think on some level, I think I would, if I hated that job so bad, I think I would wait till the people went on vacation and sent my resignation to them effective immediately while they on vacation.
Oof.
So that's so bad. So now they got to worry about it. Yeah. No, now they got to worry about it while they're on vacation.
That's horrible. Oh, you're so mean.
That's not me. I said if it was a job I hated.
If it was a job you hated. Okay. Yeah. Who cares?
So I think that's what I would do, just for laughs and giggles. But yeah, that'd be kind of funny.
That'd be hilarious.
And then I would take a vacation.
Effective, you know, 3 weeks from now, I'm still be employed for 3 weeks, but I'm gonna be on vacation those whole 3 weeks.
I know people that have done that.
Yeah.
That's funny.
What are they gonna do?
Nothing.
It's your
they
PTO.
Can't. You recruited. Yeah. I know that's right.
All right. So my question to you is, what do you think about that Silicon Valley bank failure?
What?
You didn't hear about that bank that failed?
I have, but what was the question?
What do you think about that?
I personally don't care.
Why?
Because rich white people are losing their money. Oh, dear Lord.
No, that's the thing. They're not. So.
Well, that was their. The problem is they are going through that because they didn't prepare financially for the rate hikes.
No, that's not why. That's not what happened. What happened was the Trump administration rolled back bank regulations.
Right.
And because of those rollbacks, this bank, they said 16 banks failed under the Trump administration after they did those rollbacks. And now it's been like two with the Biden administration so far. But the FDIC was going to cover 100% of the depositors' funds versus the $250,000 maximum that they normally insure.
Okay.
Which people are in an uproar about because it's basically a full blown out bank bailout.
Right, but also the reason why they were having those issues is because they wasn't fully prepared for the rate increases. Their money was not protected. Those people that were over there, it was poorly managed.
That's why they fired everybody.
That's what I'm saying. It was poorly managed. My take on it, I personally don't care. I'm not going to care about stuff like that until my people are financially in a better place. It really didn't affect anybody but white people.
The rich are upset because the investors
and the stock, stockholders and everything stuff, like that. They lost money. Boo hoo. Niggas lose money all the time. We lose it all the time.
That is very true.
As we earn it, we're more likely to be lower paid, especially black women. We're more likely to take a decrease in pay just for the sake of saying, oh, we don't have the experience. We don't have the financial literacy to really be able to invest in big and larger banks like that anyway.
Well, you need the capital to be able to do that in the first place. Yeah.
Yeah. But you could. But the problem is us as black people, we don't even bank within our own black banking systems. You want to make an impact. Now, if I heard a black bank completely shutting down, I'd be like, damn, that's fucked up.
Yeah.
But okay, that's what y'all wanted. Y'all want to continue?
This was specifically a startup.
Exactly. Y'all did not financially prepare yourself. That's on y'all. That ain't got nothing to do with me. Because you know me, I'm old school. I just told you I want to take money out of the banks and just have, go back to old school. You know how like your auntie and your grandmas and shit had shit in mattresses and shit? You cannot trust banks. You can't.
my advice on that is, people, if you are banking with just solely banks, get you in a credit union. You need to get you in a credit union, and you need to get have your own stash of money somewhere.
Somewhere.
I don't care if it's in a vault or something, for in the case of oh shit moments. And never put your full trust in a bank. Honestly, not even your full trust in a credit union either. You need to be financially sound as a whole and be like, this is what I need to do with my money, period. Period, point blank.
Fair enough.
So fair that enough. Was your question?
That was my question.
We went from like goofy weird questions to yes, serious questions.
Because that's all I pay attention to is like the economics. I was watching the economics video before we started the podcast. Reading up on these bank failures, because they're expecting more bank failures.
They will
in the coming years, in the coming months.
Yeah, and they will. They will continue to fail. They will continue to. They're talking about all of this stuff, and that's another whole podcast.
Yeah, that's a different topic.
A financial podcast, but yeah, if you ask me personally, I don't care.
Okay, that's good to know. I mean, I care because I want to make sure, because they're specifically talking about like smaller credit unions and mm-hmm. smaller, you know, private banks and stuff like that. Is what they were saying, mm-hmm. but SVB was the second largest in history. Mm-hmm. So it was a big bank that failed.
Yeah, it'd be like Huntington or, I don't know, somebody else.
Somebody else. Yeah. But
yeah, get somebody else to do it. My money's not invested in there.
That's true.
Typically put my money where it's going to work for me, not for their personal gain. Like, I get shit from all over, like different banks, like even with Chase. Oh, come get my car loan for what? So you can jack my interest rate up for no reason. No, your product's not even that great, bro. So, no.
Okay.
But, yeah. So, no, I don't care.
That's
but
fair
I'm
enough.
Glad that you care, because what you care about, I care about to some extent. I'm just not as passionate about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say I'm necessarily passionate. It's just interesting to me. How
interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting how the when things fail, how they're characterized. Not by media, but like how the government, mm-hmm. you know, this one bank failed and right, blah, right. blah, 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 blah. You know, it's, I don't know.
Something different. Well, thank you all. I want to start off by saying thank you all for actually tuning in, listening in, and, you know, listening to us, you know, talk about different things regarding finances, regarding family, relationships, friendships, whatever the case may be. Make sure you can listen to us on Anchor. Oh, by the way, Anchor changed to Spotify for podcasters, yeah. FYI. But you can listen to us on Spotify. You can listen to us on Google Podcasts, Apple. There's a whole bunch of other. You could just go straight to the website. And yeah, we appreciate every...
The Distinctive BS Podcast on YouTube.
When we don't really be on YouTube anymore. Really, so
yeah,
no,
true.
Scratch that, folks. Don't listen to me. Go to YouTube. You could just listen to us. I mean, eventually we might do some, you know, video things, but now we got to find the right setup for that. But
yeah.
For now, again, thank you all for tuning in, and we will talk to you later.
Adios.